You know, it's really scary that you put everything under the same, right now, on the same line, terrorist. It's so scary. I was just in Mexico with this Zapatist. And you know that even the Zapatist guerrilla right now are called by the Mexican state the terrorists. So they have the right to do whatever they want with the Zapatist guerrilla. Before, at least, you know, they were fighting for something good in a way, and they were having this kind of international support. Now they are terrorists. Everyone's using it. It's so frightening, because we're really heading towards like a totalitarianism because of this. You cannot call everyone terrorists.
I think that terrorism is really perceived wrongly and being overused and being manipulated by politicians and media. And while I was working on the film, new rules, new laws were accepted in the Knesset in Israel. So I couldn't even deal with the word terrorism in the manner that I wanted in the film. I really wanted to break down the word, discussing it more further deeply, but then we could have been accused of supporting terrorism. It is so difficult to discuss, to really discuss the issue of terrorism today.
Radio Netherlands presents Looking for Terrorists. The program is produced and presented by David Swatling.
The main theme of the 2002 International Documentary Film Festival Amsterdam in December was What Do You Believe In? The opening film was Michael Moore's award-winning documentary, Bowling for Columbine, a reflection on the use of violence and guns in America. But many films focused on the Middle East. An Israeli director explored the history of suicide bombings. A Palestinian filmmaker investigated the attack on the refugee camp Jenin. An Iraqi refugee living in Paris documented his surreptitious and unsuccessful attempt to visit his sick mother in Baghdad. The most personal films were often the most political. At a panel discussion on religion and violence, two women sat at opposite ends of the table. I recognized them immediately because I had seen their documentaries, and in both cases, they had filmed their own very personal journeys. The Dutch call this form ego documentary because the filmmaker turns the camera on him or herself. But in the case of these two directors, the act is more selfless than self-centered, or to my mind, just plain brave.
I'm Julie Cohen-Gerstel, and the film is My Terrorist. I was born in Israel in the late 50s, and my parents were born in Israel, and my grandparents were born in Palestine. Actually, my parents also born in Palestine because they were born in 1930. And I'm a sixth generation born Israeli. My great-grandfather came from Algeria to Palestine in the early 19th century. And ever since, yes, and my daughters were born in Israel. My childhood was a very military childhood because I was raised... I grew up in a neighborhood of... generals. It was a special neighborhood for generals in the Israeli Defense Forces. Although my father was not a general, but it was, you know, it was my environment, my friends, my parents' friends. And growing up, seeing all these men, as a child, I wanted to be like them. So eventually when I was 18, I went to the army and I became an officer, and I was a brave officer. Not really fighting, by the way. Yeah, women did not fight at that time, but I was very loyal, very, very serious, very dedicated.
My name is Agnieszka Lukasiak, and the name of the film is The Nameless War. I'm born in Poland, and we escaped to Sweden when I was 8. And then I went back when I was 18 to the film school in Łódź, in Poland. And, you know, my father is a theater director. So I'm like, I have grown up in a theater, and I was actually in a theater school, like theater college, or high school, they call it. And so I was directing theater pieces in the beginning, and I actually wanted to do theater because it was so fascinating that you have to deal with life, and you just then try to give the life a shape. And then actually I finished in with film because I saw that the documentary, the same thing, but it's just further that path.
Why this movie?
Why this movie? There is two reasons. One is personal and one is more official. So I don't know which one I should answer, but the more official, I was... I actually went to Algeria because I wanted to film terrorists, or I wanted to find this, like, the base of the political conflict. But then when I came down, I just realized that actually what was interesting is not really the political conflict, but how people dealing with that, how it changed their relations toward love, toward friendship, toward this kind of basic issues in our life. That was the like... official version. And the personal version is that, you know, I have been looking for themes for a film or places that are dangerous for a long time, actually, as long as I'm doing film. And probably that's because of the adrenaline that you get. Like, you go up in the morning and you don't know if you're alive in the evening. So that makes you much more alive. I think it's a kind of, addiction. Like, actually, it's like a drug addict. You're addicted to adrenaline to feel alive, because when you come back, you don't feel nothing.
Two very different voices from two very different backgrounds approaching their subject in two very different ways. The younger, hipper Agnieszka Lukasiak might be perceived as a thrill seeker by some, deliberately journeying to dangerous locations. But the more mature, pensive Julie Cohen-Gerstel is also taking risks, albeit of a more psychological nature. Her journey involves delving into her past.
In 1978, in the summer, I worked for El Al, Israeli airline, as an air stewardess. I was a student at the time, but it was a very good summer job. So in my sixth flight, we came from Montreal to London. It was Sunday noon. And when we got off the bus by the hotel, I located a very suspicious Arab young man who was looking at me and didn't seem to be very friendly with me. And I looked back at him. I was sure he would go away, because usually when somebody is, you know, staring at you in the street and you're looking back, he moves. But he didn't go away. He kept looking at me, and he was really full of anger and hate. So I pointed at him. I was speaking about him with a colleague of mine, but he said, it's okay, it's okay. And I was sure it was not okay. So I moved to another corner, that if he shoots, I would not be there. And I had to stay outside to keep my eyes on the luggage, because I was a junior stewardess. So after a few seconds, he started shooting, and I ran away to another side of the street, and I only got really slightly wounded. I was invited to his trial a year later in London, and I testified. And as you can see in the film, 22 years later, I started to look for him, because I was sure he was already free. Because most of the political prisoners in the UK and also in Israel were freed along the years. So I was really, really surprised to find him in prison in UK with no, in a vicious circle of himself, no citizenship, no friends, no family, only one friend. So.
Why did you start to look for him in the first place?
During 1999 and 2000, the time was so good. We were hoping that the peace is really very, very close. And I became close friends with Palestinians. And it was suddenly, really, I felt that maybe he's sitting somewhere and I wouldn't know it's him in the room. So I wanted, first of all, to locate him. Then, when I started to look for him, for locating him, I said, well, I might as well talk with him. Then I said, I might as well talk with him deep, you know. And then, gradually, I felt like I want to reconcile with him, yes?
What was it like to actually meet him for the first time?
I was really, really very nervous. I couldn't sleep the night before the visit. And it was, I came into the room of the visiting room and I went to the guards and say, I'm this and this and I'm for 5 minutes. So they said, table 11. And they're all kind, very low tables which are connected to the floor. You can't move them. And chairs, two chairs. And table number 11 was empty. So I understood that he hasn't arrived yet. There were some more people in the room visiting. So I went to take a Coke out of the machine. And I took two Cokes. And then I looked if he's there, and I saw somebody sitting. So I took the two cans, and I came over to him. And I was standing a bit in the distance looking at him. So he stood up. And the first thing I said to him was, you look familiar. He was really looking familiar. So I shaked his hand and we sat down. And we really, I mean, he didn't stop talking. I mean, he wanted to speak so much. But it's not because it was me, because he's a prisoner. And he really is starving for interaction from outside world. So it was really very emotional, and I was touched, although I could feel the fear and the hate, because I wanted to know so much about the attack. I wanted to know because my colleague who was killed, and I mean, what was the intention, why, when, blah, but he didn't want to speak about it, so I respected it. He told me about his childhood, is about his life in prison, his background. And I felt for him, you know. He deserved to start a new life after 23 years, 24 years. Yeah.
Yuli's scenario changed after she met Fahid and discovered he did not want to be filmed. But with the use of letters, phone conversations, and archive footage, he never disappears from the story. A man named Habib changed the course of Agnieszka's scenario, and a film about violence in Algeria also became a star-crossed love story.
How I met Habib? I met him when I came down. And it was just a completely coincidence. Before I was supposed to go actually with a photographer, but he was too scared, so he actually sent a letter to the Algerian embassy in Poland, telling them that he's going to do very dangerous material. So it was an anonymous letter for them not to give him a visa. Okay, so he didn't get a visa, and I found out later that it was himself. But then by that time I didn't know. So I went alone, and I was in a party just like 2 days before I went, and everyone knew about the fact that I was going. Like the whole filmic circle in Warsaw were just like, oh, you're going to die, you know, and they made this kind of goodbye party. And at this party, someone came with an Algerian girl that they knew from somewhere, and I told her I'm going, and she told me, but listen, someone has to pick you up because you cannot walk on the street alone even. And I was like, okay, oh, I didn't know that. And she gave me this address, but it was to a guy anyway. And then she said that she's going to call him and maybe he can come and get me. And I went there, and actually I didn't expect him to come, to show up, but he did. And yeah, and the situation started very quickly.
So almost immediately upon arriving in Algeria, the movie, the story changed.
No, because not at all. The first thing, I was a bit of a shock for people because I was the first foreigner coming to Oran in a very long time, like a completely non-Algerian person. And I came with a camera with dreadlocks saying that I'm from the television, and they were looking at a lonely woman, no? So they were thinking I was completely out of my mind. I was completely crazy, you know? Like they didn't want me to get in really big trouble, but nobody was taking me seriously at all. I was looking for terrorists. So actually, if Habib didn't fall in love with me, probably I would be on the boat back or the flight back within 24 hours. But he didn't want me to go, so he was like, okay, I'm going to help you to find this terrorist. No, but and then, in a way, we started to look for this terrorist, and we found out that it was actually the military themselves that was killing, and this victim association didn't exist. And we started to have really big problem. The family of Habib was really getting panicked because they knew that if we start to look for things like that, it would get really dangerous very quickly. So they want to send me back. So what happened then was that we, in a way, we were hiding together. Like we were not staying in his house, really, we were trying to hide. And in the end, I just realized I have to change the theme because I will never be able to show the war through showing the war. Because you don't see the war. That the base of terrorism is that it's invisible. You know, for me, it was not any longer at that point a question of making a film. That's all. For me, it was a point that I was so much in love. I think it was the first time that I realized what love is. So I think I would do everything for it to work out. I was completely film, I don't care. You know, there were absolutely no kind of boundaries for what I could do at that stage. And for him, it was the same. The only thing that was given by the film, while I kept on filming, was that the film was giving me a kind of feeling of safeness. It's like as long as very horrible things are happening, but as long as you have a camera, you feel much more safe because there's a purpose. And then you're never really letting you into the situation. So you're always behind the camera. And that was the only thing why I actually went on filming at a certain point, because that made me feel safe in that situation. But the film was long forgotten that it was about the film.
What's not in Agnieszka's film is the scene when Habib's family found out about their love affair. Enraged, they threw her and her equipment out into the street and forbid their son to have anything to do with her. Agnieszka returned to Poland, discouraged, but determined to finish her film. She flew back to Algeria on September 11th, 2001. The events of that day added a new element to both women's scenario, fear.
In Algeria, the fear comes from the fact that death is a concrete thing. Most of these people, they know someone that have died. Most of them know a lot of people that have died. A lot of people from their families have died. I don't think that I met anyone that don't have someone in the family that have been killed by the terrorists or will have to escape by the terrorists. And I said that I need to show fear. And then I was speaking to homosexuals and they told me that, okay, we can tell you about this and so on. I said, no, I need to see it because everyone is telling me about that, but I have to show it somehow. And I was telling them, except that I'm going to this forest to see what's happening there. And They told me, okay, we're going with you. And I said, listen, we should really think about that. I don't know. And they said, no, because you wanted to show the fear. And he was talking so much about this adrenaline rush. So, okay, we are going with you, no? But they were really scared. We were in the car. Like, there was many moments that I didn't film when they were on the way to step out. But they stayed. And in a way, you know, the thing is in Algeria that I knew that it's not so dangerous because there's a lot of people that they're living in a state of fear. That doesn't mean that this fear is so actual right now. They're brought up in a state of fear. So for me, in the beginning, when you come, you believe in it. You're very scared of everything. But later on, if you cross this limit, you see that, okay, maybe it's dangerous, but it's not so dangerous.
There's a point in the film when your attitude changes.
I was so convinced, I was so sure, I was so determined. And a day after 9/11, 12th of September, I was so angry about the Americans. How can he say we'll smoke them out? How can he look at the terrorism as a symptom and never bothers from the cause? I was really pissed off. But then another day after, suddenly, I became so frightened because, I don't know, I thought it was this third world war starting and it's going to be atomic and chemical and biological. And I became very hysterical. And this is when I really didn't want to go on. I mean, I wanted to write Fahed a letter and I couldn't stand him. It was real, real. I mean, I said, well, all this year I was against the Israeli consensus, but now all the world is, I'm too small to be so controversial, you know. I became very, yeah. But as you can see in the film, I came back to my senses in a little while, yes. And also what it was most important in this phase is that I really understood that the fear is the thing that leads us to hate. If we are not afraid, we don't hate.
Early in Yuli Cohen Gerstel's film, there is footage of her appearance on an Israeli television talk show. One of the other guests is the mother of a teenage girl killed in a terrorist attack. The tension rises as the host seems to almost revel in broadening the gulf between the two women's points of view. Reconciliation versus revenge. But tension turns to heartbreak when the two women meet again.
After the television show, we exchanged phone numbers. And she called me. And she called me and she said, I want to meet you. And I said, okay, I'm coming. Is it okay if I bring my cameraman and soundman? And she said, yes, sure. So I came and I didn't know what she was. I naively thought that she wanted me to help her to take out the hate. Because somehow I had a feeling that she sees that she suffers more. I mean, I don't know if you say more or less, but she suffers so much from the hate. So I was naively thinking that she wants me to. But anyway, I came and we spent about 4 hours together. And it was only after that I understood that she wanted to persuade me not to go on with this thought of mine of forgiving. We're still in contact. She was in one of my screenings in Haifa, and she had a speech. She respects me a lot. She doesn't agree with me. We don't agree. But, I mean, while I was there, I thought it was two monologues. I thought there was no dialogue at all. But when I see the film again and again, I think that there is something there, maybe only between mothers, maybe not more than that. Yeah.
You're a mother yourself. The last scene in the film, you're watching your girls go to school, I think. Why is that the last scene?
It could be the first scene as well. Because this is my main concern, the future of my daughters in Israel. One of the main reasons I decided to make the act of forgiving before deciding to make a film out of it was that I was really concerned that my daughters will grow up and tell me, what did you do back then? Why you were so quiet? Why you were so passive? Shame on you. So this is one of the reasons I did what I did, yes.
The main theme of this festival is, what do you believe in? What do you believe in?
Well, I'm trying to believe in human nature, but I'm kind of getting more and more pessimistic about human nature. So I'm trying to believe that, yeah, human nature is good, not evil, and only politicians are evil. But how come we cooperate with their evil?
I think that what we can do as filmmakers right now, and we should do, everyone, whatever themes we used to like, you should show the truth, what is happening, so to change people's opinion, so that people start to react in a way with a common sense, because what is now is like, it's really madness.
It should come as no surprise these two filmmakers continue to look for truth in troubled areas of the world. Yuli Cohen-Gerstel plans to follow up her documentary, My Terrorist, with an investigation into the occupied territories called My Colonist. And Agnieszka Lukasiak is planning yet another dangerous trip to investigate another nameless war, the one in Chechnya.
Looking for Terrorists was produced and presented by David Swatling. Technical production, Vim Rossing. The music was performed by the East West Ensemble. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.